back in fictional frontiers. The balance between the past and future. Nostalgia-inspired expressions can only take you so far because, when it comes to storytelling, imitation is not the sincerest form of flattery. That's why Stranger Things has taken entertainment by storm. Somehow making the past seem new again, its blend of 80s sci-fi and high adventure would never have been so embraced if not for the efforts of actors like our guest today, David Harbour. David, thanks again for taking the time. Welcome to Fictional Frontiers.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, David, when Stranger Things was pitched to you, what was your initial reaction?
They sent me the script, and I read the pilot script, and I hear a lot of actors say this, so I sort of hate saying it, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
It really was the best script that I had read, the best pilot script I think I've probably ever read. The writing was just so sophisticated, and the storytelling was so sophisticated, and you could just tell that they'd worked so hard at every detail of the story and the characters, and even they included like a lookbook with it that had like looks of various other movies from the 80s, and it just had a real I don't know, you can sort of tell things. It doesn't even matter what it is, whether it's a script or whether it's like a piece of furniture or whether it's like, you can just tell when like care goes into something and detail goes into something and like heart and soul goes into something. And I really, it just like resonated off the page that this thing had tremendous soul. So when I read it, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I'm sure Netflix will never cast me in this because they'll probably want a big star. And so after being very excited about reading that script, I got very angry that I would never be cast. But then crazily enough, I was.
Well, we are so happy that you were chosen for this role because, to be honest with you, there's a lot of 80s stuff out there, and I'm not going to give you my age, but I can tell you that I'm a fan of the 80s, and there's a reason for that. But, there's this nostalgia push, and so many people are trying to go back to the 80s and kind of bring that spirit back, and you feel like, okay, if we don't do it right, it's just going to come off as being a knockoff or something with a real lack of originality. So were you concerned about that going in? You said that they did such a great job in prepping you and pitching you. That really wasn't much of a concern at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, so much of the 80s stuff, not only that, but it can also be sort of pandering, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they know they have a demographic of people, and they know that if they throw out a certain title of a movie, like, people will be like, oh, I remember when I watched that, and I'll go watch that again or something. So it feels pandering. It feels cheap. This, to be honest, felt like, and this is crazy for me to say, but it feels almost like the most original thing I've ever done. Because while it takes the lexicon of the 80s, while it takes almost the alphabet of the 80s, it creates its own sentences with that alphabet. So in that way, it's not like you're taking Ghostbusters and you're like redoing Ghostbusters and you're doing the same story of like a bunch of people fight. That to me is taking the sentences, taking the actual story and rebooting it. This was like we took the language of the 80s, which was like kind of kids on bikes or kids with walkie talkie or a lot of time on your hands, or like these tropes of like this cop who's kind of messed up and doesn't care at all and then winds up finding his purpose. So we took these tropes and this alphabet, but then we created an entirely original story. So you don't know, like, what's going to happen with this little girl with a shaved head. I mean, you don't know if the cop is going to rise to the occasion. So in that way, it was very unique, and it used the kind of flavor of the 80s that we like, but it told a very original story. And so that, to me, was like what was different and compelling about it.
Exactly. And I think what really has helped this show tremendously is the ubiquity of the internet, because thanks to streaming services, we can now tell stories like that. We've talked to so many people in different areas of the entertainment space, and they've said, look, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there were only a certain number of outlets and areas you could kind of tell your story in. And now there's this huge global marketplace, and there's so many nice niche areas you can kind of play with thanks to streaming services. And now it's kind of leveled the playing field. So do you think that's really part of the success of the story with respect to Stranger Things?
Absolutely. I mean, look, you got to thank the internet for two reasons, actually. First of all, for allowing us to do it, as you say, with a lot more risky content out there. And secondly, I mean, basically, when the show came out, it was barely advertised.
Yeah, I remember.
And so what happened was there was a big social media, like everybody on Facebook was like telling their friends, and everybody was on Twitter and Instagram, and sort of like this word of mouth. It wasn't hyped at all, at least the first season. The second season, we had some hype, but the first season, like, nobody really knew about it. It kind of came under the radar, and so the internet really made it what it was. It, all these fans on the internet, on social media, really, like, you know, launched it. But yeah, in terms of the new platforms, I mean, there's so many mixed feelings about the new model, like, in our industry. I know there's guys, like, who've gone on record, like Chris Nolan, sort of, you know, the death of cinema and being very angry that Netflix is releasing movies and there's not a lot of the hoopla. But I sort of think that I'm so grateful to the new platforms, because someone like me, even, like, I didn't exist. Like, a major studio wasn't going to take a bet on me being a lead in a show. And the fact that there is so much new content, and the fact that Netflix is willing to take so many risks, like, meant that they could even take a risk on me. They didn't have to develop Stranger Things for like 10 years and like get it all right and perfect and then cast, you know, the biggest star in the world at the time or that they could get. And, you know, this, they could just sort of let these Duffer brothers do what they wanted to do and kind of give them some money and just like let them play. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't work, it's just sort of like one of 10 shows that they need to work. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I love the new platform and I love the new content. And I sort of even like the fact that movies and TV shows now are released with a lot less hoopla.
I agree.
And it's kind of become like a commodity, almost like dish soap or like laundry detergent. It's like, I just want my good show. Like, I just want to get it and I want to watch it. And I sort of like art being more of a simple thing like that, like almost a commodity, like something like food or laundry detergent or something. It's something that you just sort of get. So I love the new model.
No, I do too, and I think it really gives a chance and a platform to incredible artists, talents like yourself. As you mentioned, you weren't the biggest star then. Now you're a pretty big star now, so we'll talk about the awards nominations in a moment. But what I really like about this format is that it kind of levels the playing field, and now if you don't bring your A game as a creator, as a storyteller, as an artist, you have a very good chance of being replaced. So it kind of forces not only the talents behind the productions to bring their best, but also forces studios and networks to say, you know what, we've really got to go down a less beaten path to tell a story that might be exciting for audiences.
Yeah, it forces all of us to take more risks and sort of, you know, because the marketplace is bigger in a sense, to take more risks. We can't just be dinosaurs who kind of rest on our laurels and expect people to watch. There is so much content for them to choose that you have to do something extraordinary. And I love that. I love that.
And we love your character on this show. And it's funny, you know, in so many genre programs, we see the police officers kind of, or sheriffs, if you will, put into a position where they're kind of not given the spotlight in a way that's really positive in so many respects. And I'm not trying to say that Hopper is not flawed, as we all are, but there's a fatherly glow to him. You know, there's almost this feeling that you can turn to him. At least I felt that way watching the show, that, okay, I have a 10-year-old son, and I would feel comfortable saying, look, if my son got lost in a department store, Hopper is the kind of character I'd want him to run to. So do you think that's part of what makes him so appealing? Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, if he didn't have to take a 10-minute break to go get a beer and smoke a cigarette, I think he might be a good cop. No, look, I agree. Like, I mean, it's funny, you know, even in terms of going into season two, like, what the Duffers and I worked on creating with him, you know, there was some talk about him kind of going into the dark side with Brenner and, you know, making this deal with the government, which wound up being a much simpler thing. But there was talk about sort of shading him in a darker color in season two. And we just, you know, in terms of creating the character, like, he just is such a good guy. But, like, even in the pit talks that I would have with them, we just kept coming back to this thing where we were like, Hopper would never do that. He's just too good a guy. Yep. Like, he really is, you know, he's wrapped up in all this flawed masculinity is what I would call it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't like kids. He's angry. All he drinks. He smokes. He acts out with women, all this stuff. But underneath it, he's a real sensitive guy. And in a sense, he almost mirrors the children.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things about finding the Will character is I think that he identifies by being this sort of outcast. I mean, he's sort of chosen that life by outcasting himself after his daughter's death. But I think in a way he is kind of a grown-up child, and with that childlike sweetness to him that's buried underneath all these layers. But, like, you just kind of trust him. He's just a good guy. And I really love that about him.
Well, that's a credit to you, the nuance you've brought to the role, and actually the relationship between not only you and the other kids, but 11 in particular, because seeing that relationship develop, the word that kept coming to my mind was redemption. I wonder if that was part of the makeup there.
That's a great word for it. Yeah, that's a great word for it, because, you know, she clearly has father issues with her papa manipulating her and using her in a certain way, and he certainly has unresolved daughter issues in terms of, like, not being able to prevent the unpreventable cancer that killed his kid. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think they're both looking for redemption. And I have to say, like, you know, I was nervous going into season two because I did think we did a really good job on season one.
Yes.
You know, you just want it to be better and better, and you don't want people to be disappointed. And it was such a wonderful working relationship and just the chemistry that I have with Millie that, you know, I'm kind of, to be honest, like, I'm kind of grumpy around her. I mean, I'm kind of like off camera, like, you know, I sort of have mixed feelings about these kids being so famous, and I get worried about them. And sometimes I act out and I get grumpy, but, like, when we work together, like, there's just so much, like, caring between us and, like, so much, like, love between us. And I really do care about her so much. And I am protective of her. And all those feelings that David has for Millie, I was able to bring into the work because it was just sort of right there on the page. And so, yeah, I mean, the season two changed me as a human being, as, like, all great projects should. Like, I don't have a child. But it was a way for me to explore this idea of caring for someone greater than you care for yourself and, like, loving a human being way beyond yourself and that sort of fatherly thing. And it was very enlightening. I mean, I think it opened me up as an individual, and it was really, really exciting to play.
Wow. It's like you said, art imitating life, so to speak, because you said that these kids have gotten so famous. And I was going to ask you about that because, you know, it's interesting. Once you reach my age, and again, I won't reveal my age, but once you reach my age, time is no longer your friend, and you really don't pay attention to it. I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember what my birth date is, and I remember laughing and joking with my wife, saying, okay, I think I'm X age. Okay, I'm 46 now, but I remember saying, I thought I was literally 45. When I was 46, and yeah. You know, and actually the year before that, I made myself seem older than I was. So it's all fluid. But with these kids, you see it, you know, you see it on the set, you see them growing,
yeah.
You see them go through those things. So how humbling is that? How much of a challenge is that? You said you're very protective of them, but at the same time, it really gives you an appreciation of youth and how time flies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple feelings I have. Acting is a crazy profession because, you know, if you were like a neurologist, like you feel like if you're like 40s, in your 40s and you're a neurologist, you're going to be better at neurology than like a 12-year-old boy.
You hope,
but the thing about acting that's funny is like there are scenes when I see these kids play and I'm like, God, you guys are so good. Like, you're just as good as I am. Well, that's not fair. I don't like that. But I do think that they, you know, it's been an interesting process because I sort of wish that the world would sort of turn away from them and just allow them to do work. But, of course, that's impossible. But they've remained remarkably grounded. And when we get on set, like when they're out in the world sort of between when we're shooting, they're sort of involved in their own dramas. But when we get on set and we all work together, we have a little insular kind of family dynamic that was set up very early on in season one. And it's lovely. And they really do, in a weird way, when they're working, they really get to be kids, I think, more than anywhere. Because, like, when they're out doing interviews and doing photo shoots, they have to be have this sort of poise. And when they're shooting, we just really want them to be, you know, 13, 14-year-old kids and to mess around and to make fart jokes and stuff.
Exactly.
And so, in a way, it's nice to see that they still have that in them and that they still can use that. But they're really cool little individuals. And it's interesting to watch them grow up, too, because some of them I didn't expect certain things from. And they've really developed into these, like, interesting people. And it's so weird to watch, like, little human beings grow up. Because when we first started the show, they were like,
yeah,
little babies. And now I look at them, and they're teenagers. I mean, it's scary. They have questions about girls and things that I don't want to talk about.
I can imagine. Believe me, I'm going through that on a pretty daily basis with my son. So you know what it's like now. And like I said, art imitating life. And, going back to that for a moment, what's really cool and really, I think, wonderful with respect to the show, and it's very clear by the way these performances are emerging, is that it kind of reminds me of Lord of the Rings, and I'll tell you how. Because we've had many conversations with people who worked on that project years ago, a lot of people from Weta Workshop, and they all said that one of the things that kind of separated that project from so many others was this sense of family. And it was so organic, and they said, you know, it was really wonderful to see, because the bonds that were created on that production, it's very difficult to replicate that. And they felt like, okay, years later, we're going to see these people and there will be something special there. And that's not artificial. And that comes across on the screen. So do you think that's really informed the work as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I've never had an artistic collaboration like this where, and I do think this comes from the top down, just basically what the Duffers are attracted to in casting, and Carmen Cuba as well. But, like, not only family, but just the fact is, like, they're all good people. Like, and that's not always the case when you work on a Hollywood movie, you know what I mean?
I can imagine,
like,
yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of narcissism, there's a tremendous amount of people in it for all the wrong reasons, you know, selfishness, or just trying to, you know, you deal with that all the time, and it's fine. I mean, it's part of the business. But in this, like, there's just a genuine, everyone's just like a genuinely good person. And all of our sort of social media excitement for each other is completely and utterly genuine. And I don't really, you know, and one of the things that's great is we really do kind of keep it for when the cameras are rolling. Like, we don't hang out that much off screen. Like, we're not, like, together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we get together and work, like, it's just a blast. And, like, in the scenes, we really put a lot of that intimacy and a lot of that personal care and concern. And so, in that way, like, it's even better than a friendship, because you're actually, like, creating something
yes.
with somebody. And that's all I really want to do is, like, you know, give the world something with my day. Like, contribute something. And so these family bonds and this intimacy between us, and then we get to go and, like, capture it on camera. And so it's, like, yeah, it's just really great. I mean, I feel so boring just saying this over and over again. But, like, I really do just, like, love those guys. I mean, it's so counter to my personality. Like, I'm generally a pretty grumpy guy, but I just adore them all. I'm so sorry, Internet. But I really do. I just love them.
Well, like I said, it's akin to a sports team or an NBA team or NFL team where, you know, there's a common goal, and the battles really bring you together. And you know, there was a wonderful special the other day I was watching with Magic Johnson talking about his time with the Lakers. And, you know, obviously, like you said, people have their time off. They don't necessarily hang out together. People have their own interests and backgrounds. But when it's time to, quote unquote, go to battle, there's a bond there, and there's a love there that just can't be replicated. And actually, he said that when the time's over, you're going to miss that in the future. So I would imagine it's probably going to be the case here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even when we go off and do other projects, not to say that those other projects aren't great. I mean, I don't want to discount the other projects.
Of course.
But there's just something, there's something very special about the relaxed, knowing each other quality of that, where it's like you know, you get on set and you don't really know what the other people are going to do, but you just know that they're going to surprise you in ways that you trust and that are great. So, like, you know, especially when I go to work and I'm being directed by the Duffer Brothers, who will just always offer great ways to shoot things, great insights, have a great script. And then I'll get to do a scene with, like, Winona. And every time I act with her, like, I just look in her face and I just can't believe the express, like, I just can't believe the life that's in there. So, yeah, I'm just so grateful for this family. Yeah, it's very, it really is that way. I mean, yeah.
Well, we're very grateful to have you get the accolades that you've received, because, again, that means there'll be more to come. And I have to ask you, with respect to the SAG nomination and the Globe nomination, do you feel like, again, comparing this to sports, do you feel like you're an MVP who's kind of representing the team as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, of course I'm very appreciative. It's a bit confusing to me that I was kind of singled out.
I don't think
like,
so.
Like, because I watch the show, and I just think that everyone, it's almost like colors in a rainbow. It's like, you know, everybody of their own color is so strong and so unique that it's like this year it just feels like everybody was like, you know what, we like blue, so we're going to pick blue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of got chosen for these awards, which I'm very grateful for. I mean, the one thing I could say is I've worked a long time and I've gotten very little recognition. So thank you for recognizing me. These kids are children and we should wait till they can legally drive before we give them awards. But it was just very nice to be singled out. But I have to say that, you know, there is a little bit of a quality. It's like, 'cause to me, the entire show as a whole and all the pieces, and I watch other people's work on that show and I'm just like blown away. So, you know, I think everybody kind of deserves it. And this year I got sort of picked to be the guy, and I'm very grateful for that. But also, you know, it really is a representation of all the chemistry I have with everybody else. It's not me alone.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, David, two quick questions as we head out. One, I know you probably hate this. I hate it because I have to do this quite a bit in the industry as well. And that's kind of putting together the elevator pitch or trying to explain to people the genre subjects or projects we cover. So assume that you were, talking to someone who had never heard of Stranger Things. And if you go to any Target store, there's a whole section dedicated to Stranger Things. So you should not miss it. There's no excuse for that. But if you had to pull someone like, say, my father, who's, is really, really, you know, not as, I guess, into entertainment as he used to be. He's kind of on the iller side, sadly. But you said, okay, look, Mr. Juan, here's Stranger Things. I want to, you know, introduce this show to you. How would you describe it to him? I mean, he's a guy maybe who loves film, who loves television, but at the same time, has been around the bend quite a few times. So, you know, it takes a lot to get him excited.
Oh, geez, Mr. Juan. I'm terrible at this, Mr. Juan. I am not your guy, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Juan, have you ever seen the movie E.T., perhaps the movie Goonies, perhaps the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, these Spielberg epics from the 80s that used to make you feel the magic of the movies with this innocence of children and this kind of, like, love for cinema and this love for storytelling? Well, Mr. Juan, that is embodied in the show called Stranger Things. Basically, it's a show about a small town in Indiana where a kid goes missing, and he's being looked for by his friends, who are all his age, who are like 11 years old, by their older brothers and sisters, who are like kind of seniors in high school, and then by his mother and by a local chief of police. He's kind of an alcoholic mess up, and we all go searching for this kid, and what begins to unfold is a great government conspiracy. So there's a lot of, like, kind of fun political intrigue to it. There's a lot of dealing with, kids' innocent friendships. There's a lot of you know, adult drama as well. And then at the end of the day, there are some interdimensional monsters that we have to deal with. So it's kind of a mashup of this, like, heavy drama and then this great, like, epic sci-fi, a la a Spielberg film like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or E.T.
There you go.
How's that?
That's perfect. No, you nailed it.
Is Mr. Wong going to watch it tonight?
Well, it's funny. He's already watching it, but I'm kind of reticent about airing this for him because he's going to say, look, you know, I would have gotten on this bandwagon a lot sooner had you had someone like David pitch it. And I would say, well, listen, he's a SAG-nominated actor. What am I supposed to compare myself to? That's not fair. You know, he's on this show. Of course he's going to do a better job. So, but no, brilliant, brilliant job there. But David, it's been wonderful, my friend. And, you know, last question quickly as we head out. I know you're working on Hellboy. And the only question I have is the training. Because, and again, I don't want to knock Hopper's physique, okay? But there's definitely a difference between the physiques of the two characters. How hard is that to kind of bounce back and forth physically? That's all I'm going to ask you because, you know, like I said, maybe I can take inspiration from that.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's a lot of complicated lighting and shading and prosthetics and makeup effects, all right? But, it's you know, working out is, as everyone can attest to, no fun.
No,
and then
not
getting
at all.
Out of shape is a tremendous amount of fun. So I've gone back to the dozen donuts a day diet, and I'm excited to bring you Jim Hopper this year.
Again, David Harbour, the MVP, as we've said, of Netflix's Stranger Things, Seasons 1 and 2. David, you're always welcome back on Fictional Frontiers. Thanks for bringing the energy to all your projects, and kudos to you for all these wonderful, incredibly well-earned accolades.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Nice talking to you. If I still show, I never wanted to be this inside and so low, but the guilt makes no connection.
Still show, I never wanted to be this inside and too low, but the guilt makes no connection.